session number 14846, Reel 2.
Mr. McEwen, Reel 2.
Right. We went to arrest centres on two other occasions at Monaghan Road. When we had unexploded bombs, we had a £1,000 bomb outside our house, and another parachute mine in Rosebery Avenue, which was next avenue to us. On both of those occasions, we were evacuated to the rest centre. And I remember leaving the rest centre one Sunday morning when we'd had a very severe bombing, and my mother, myself, and Mrs. Petchy walked towards Upton Park. The East Ham High Street was full of debris. As far as I remember, there were no services. There was no gas, no electricity, and no water. Sydney Greens had been demolished, and the little Colosseum. There's stuff from the chemist strewn all over the road. And there was a quietness about the whole thing. This stillness was almost eerie. And then we made our way past the Plashett Park to Upton Park. And I can't remember whether we went to see some relatives of Mrs. Petchy or not, but that was quite a chilly morning on the Sunday.
When was that?
That was one day after we'd been to the Monaghan Road Rest Centre, and it was on a Sunday, as I recall. But no, it was probably the worst bombing East Ham had ever had, so you could probably find out the date from that. But as I remember it, that was probably the worst day. Oh, by the way, I didn't mention that we used to get a bicycle allowance at the Civil Defence. I think it was 6 shillings a week or something, but we used to get this allowance.
To keep your bicycle in repair?
But, yes, yeah. I went round to watch them removing the parachute mine from Rosebery Avenue. As I was in uniform, I was allowed to get that close. I saw these chaps in army uniform come along, and it had been lodged in the roof. It was a bit hairy from time to time.
How did public morale stand up in East Ham, do you think, to the effect of the bombing?
Very well indeed. As far as I was aware, nobody seemed to worry too much about it. They sort of got used to it. There were a couple of occasions when Mrs. Petchy, for instance, went into hysterics when some incendiary bombs were dropping, and I was in the shelter with her at the time and had to calm her down because she was saying we were all going to be burnt alive. And on another occasion, my mother was upset because in our shelter, where my father put the light, they'd plastered in the light, and the plaster fell off the wall on top of her. She got a bit worried on that occasion. But generally speaking, the morale was good. Having said that, since the war, my mother's had a nervous breakdown, so she was called up. She went to Union Street at Stratford, and she started off working in the shop, and then was asked if she wanted to take over as a foreman's clerk. And she worked as a clerk in the gas company until the end of the war. And Union Street and that area is pretty well badly bombed.
Was her breakdown related to the war at all?
She feels it was. I don't know. We never did find out what the reason for the breakdown was. But she went into several hospitals shortly after the war to have treatment. And she still suffers very bad from tremors.
Does she often talk about the horrors of the war?
No, she doesn't talk a lot about it. We do from time to time chat together. She remembers this particular time in Chipping Norton very well because we thought we were going to a marvellous house when we went to Rollwright and were very disillusioned. Ran out of beer, I remember, in 1944 when the pubs were shut or something or other. We used to drink a lot. I remember that I used to go with my mother and her friend and my dad. And we sometimes used to go over as far as Wanstead, to the Duke of Edinburgh at Wanstead and drink.
Was it common for beer to run out in the war?
Yes, we used to queue up. I remember at one stage, we queued up one day at the Duke of Edinburgh, and when we got inside, all I had was Guinness, and after that, Moussac. And so we drank Guinness and Moussac, and that was all that was on offer. Another thing I remember is when I was in my at Sandringham Central, Fred Sleet, who's a scout troop leader, asked me if I would help him run the scouts. So we went over to the scouts at Forest Gate, and within a very short time I was a patrol leader, together with Ron Pickering, the Olympic chap. He was also a patrol leader there, and another fellow called David Burke. So we ran the scout troop. And then eventually I joined the Home Guard.
Was it called the East Ham Home Guard?
Manor Park Home Guard. It was at Manor Park near the coronation, and as far as I'm aware, it was the Manor Park Home Guard.
How old would you have been?
I was 17 when I joined the Home Guard.
So towards the end of the war?
Towards the end of the war.
What kind of an outfit was that?
That was very good. We used to do this 2-2 shooting. I think we had Ross rifles, Canadian Ross rifles, issued to us. And they used to shoot on this rifle range for a shilling a head. And I used to get runners-up prize nearly every time. The CO used to win. So, used to help with the pocket money.
Did it bear any resemblance to the image which is projected in Dad's Army?
Not at that late stage, no, because they, by the time I joined, they were pretty well into sort of military standards, and we used to drill, and we could shoot, and we all had uniforms, and the only difference, the only thing was that, as I say, I was 17 and there were some people probably 70-odds, this sort of thing. The age range was much the same as Dad's Army. But I remember seeing early in the war the LGV people, and that was much more like Dad's Army, I should think. There would be the butcher and the baker and the candlestick maker sort of thing in the LGV. But towards the latter end of the war, they were pretty well up to military standard. And then, of course, at 18, in September 45, I got me calling up papers. And I went to Winchester Barracks to do general service until I was selected to join the service corps. A shorthand writer.
Do you have any personal memory of VE Day?
Yes, my sister and I went down to Trafalgar Square. There was a lot of singing and dancing and some music. And then we made our way round to, I think it's the Rainbow Club, the American Club. And there was lots of cheering from the balconies of the American Rainbow Club. We were below and more singing and dancing. And we stayed in London overnight. I remember walking around and seeing people laying around with bottles of beer, probably some of the alcoholics that were around.
Where was the Rainbow Club?
That was in Piccadilly, as far as I can recall.
What did it consist of?
Well, all I remember about it is that we were outside the Rainbow Club. There was a balcony, and the American troops were standing on the balcony, waving to the crowd, you know.
Was there any misbehaviour on VE Day?
Not that I saw. I think that everybody was intent on having a party. They were knees up and singing and dancing and making merry was the sort of general way of behaving. No, we had a party, a big party.
Did people go into the fountains in Trafalgar Square?
I can't remember. I can't recall whether they did or not. I'm sure they did, but I can't really remember whether they did or not.
Did you want to go to Buckingham Palace?
No. We were so many of us that you couldn't get anywhere really, because the place was absolutely packed. Bit like Oxford Street on a Christmas, so that you could only move a yard at a time. So many people were there.
What about VJ Day? Any memory of that?
Yes, VJ Day. We went to the Duke of Edinburgh at Wanstead, and we just celebrated at that particular pub.
What did that consist of?
Well, it's just music and dancing and that sort of thing. And, of course, we had parties in the street. We had street parties where they had trestles out, and the local people all put sort of Union Jacks up and things like that. So that there was always street parties in the East End of London where I came from on any occasion. Yeah.
Was that VJ Day and VE Day?
I couldn't say for certain, but I would almost guarantee that it was on both occasions, because they had parties at the Silver Jubilee, they had a party at the Coronation, they had a party on VE Day. I'm sure that they would have had another one on VJ Day.
Which meant the most to you, do you think, VJ Day or VE Day?
Oh, VJ Day meant the most, because I was up in London at the time. And VJ Day was sort of bound to come. It was a sort of aftermath.
Just coming back to the Blitz, which was the worst in your particular area as it affected you? Was it the V weapons raids late in the war or the early raids?
It was the V weapons later on, particularly to me, because of my close escape. This V bomber, V1, that came over, landed about 800 yards away from where I was at the time. And that's close. when you've got a tremendous explosion and... So that was when I felt the most vulnerable. But these V1s, they used to come over and stop. And the atmosphere was, well, it hasn't hit me. It was a very selfish attitude we all had. I suppose one blocked out imagination those days. And... He just said, oh, good, it hasn't hit me sort of thing. And my mother tells me of a story, I don't know how true it is, that on one occasion when a V1 cut out, we put a blanket over our heads to stop it hitting us. we had this blanket in the at the doorway of the shelter, and we used to put this on the line each morning to get an airing. And my mother reckons that one day we sort of put this over her head. I can't remember the incident, but she'll probably tell you.
Did you think that the V weapons raids could pull the war around for the Germans?
No, I never at any time considered that the Germans would win the war. Even when things were going badly. It just didn't dawn on me that we would ever lose.
Now, you've shown me this photograph of yourself in the civil defence uniform. Can you tell me about the insignia that you had on it to show that you were civil defence?
Well, I have got this civil defence in yellow and the crown. And there was an M on my helmet to show that I was in the messenger service. And of course, being young lads at the time, we used to sort of dress up a bit more than was properly allowed. We used to get naval hats and lanyards, the yellow and blue lanyards. And then, of course, I had the chevrons for the year's service, and by the end of the war, I'd served nearly 4 years, I think. 3 years and something, I think it was. And as I say, we learnt this Morse transmission towards the end of the war, and one of the lads actually used it. He went into the Navy and became a wireless operator, I remember. So that it did help him learning this Morse transmission on the tappers.
Was the civil defence really organised like the army in the same way?
I can't see that there was a lot similar. We had similar uniforms except ours were blue. We didn't have officers like they had in the army. They had people that were overseeing rather than officers, so you didn't call them sir. They were Mr. this and Mr. that. There was no discipline as such. You just sort of did your duty, the heavy duty rescue, did the movement of the cranes and things like that, I presume, and the light rescue did the movement of rubble.
You were light rescue?
Well, I was a messenger, which was separate from the light rescue. My job was to help wherever possible. So, as I say, we used to climb up on top of the buildings and get people's stuff down for them. We used to clear their windows of glass. We used to do minor injuries, clean up minor injuries. And, I forgot to mention, when I was going round to this place at Manor Park, to this incident at Manor Park, there was a house alight on the left-hand side of the road I was riding down. I was bumping over all this rubble, and there was nobody at this house, which had a greenish hue, this light from the fire. And nobody seemed to be taking any notice. I didn't, because I was on my way to an incident. And nobody else seemed to be bothered about it. It was just left to burn. Why this was, I don't know. But I suppose people had seen so many fires by that time that it just didn't mean anything to them. Another thing I would like to mention is the fact that my thoughts about the women folk went down somewhat, because we had a lot of Americans and French sailors walking down East Ham High Street. They used to congregate at the Black and White Milk Bar, and I used to see all these young ladies that I knew quite well all mixing with these Americans and French sailors, and I knew that some of them were married, so I was quite disillusioned.
What, did you personally make friends with the foreign troops?
No. On one occasion, an American wanted to pick a fight with me, and a sailor came along and said to me, "Leave him to me, son. You go along and move me along." So I don't know what happened.
You didn't stand fight
out? I didn't stand fight out. No, I pushed off. He said to me, the sailor said to me, "You go along, son," he said.
How
I was about 15 at the time.
About, the intended fight?
I think he was drunk, and I suppose he just didn't like the look of me. And he started to grab hold of me and asking me if I wanted a fight and one thing or another. And I don't know why he wanted to pick on me, because we hadn't spent any words together. But I suppose he just wanted to pick on somebody.
Did the GIs and so on distribute gifts to all and sundry?
I know that some of the girls used to get nylons and things like this. I didn't sort of have a great deal of contact. It was mostly the young ladies that seemed to be sort of involved with the Americans.
So none came your way?
None came my way.
No presents came your way?
No presents came my way from Americans. Except when I joined the army. And then the Americans sent over some sweets, I remember, to the young people in the army who just got called up.
Was there any hatred of the German pilots who were carrying out the bombing?
In the early stages, the German pilots were hated, and I think if anyone had caught one, they'd have probably lynched him. But that sort of feeling sort of died as the war went on. But certainly the early days, there seemed to be a lot more hatred than there was in the latter years.
Did you feel that the burdens of the war were being equally distributed, or was there any sense that people in the East End were having to suffer more than the richer part?
No, I don't think anybody worried that much. The thing was that we were being bombed, and we were worried about our surroundings and what was happening to us. We really weren't concerned about what was happening elsewhere. It was a very neighbourly sort of thing, that doors would be open to anybody, and if you wanted to go in for a cup of tea, you could do. If any of the ladies whose husbands were in the forces wanted help, everybody was prepared to sort of help them. There was just a general affection to everybody in the local neighbourhood. And it's a pity that it's not like these days, you know. People were always willing to help.
But was it always like that in East Ham, or did the war bring out something special?
There was always a question, there was always a sense of camaraderie to a certain extent in the East End, because I suppose they had suffered, they were poor, they had suffered, they knew what suffering was. So that it was there, but it brought it out even more during the war. And my father used to go around and close off the gas mains and the meters, to collect the meters. And he came home once and cried because he'd seen a little girl and her doll's pram and her doll. And the girl had got killed in the bomb incident that happened. And my mother said that she'd never seen him cry before over a thing. But that touched him.
Did you get any VIP visits?
We had the Queen come down to East Ham and visit Caledon Road, where there's a bombing incident. And my father's picture was taken at that particular incident.
Was that appreciated or not, that the Queen should come down?
Well, I personally didn't know that it had taken place until later, and I saw a picture of the Queen at Caledon Road, East Ham, so I didn't know that she was coming down at that particular moment in time. I think that what was appreciated was the fact that she was in the ATS, I believe, at the time, and she used to sort of go around driving people around, and she seemed to be doing her bit, was the way that the EastEnders thought of it.
This is the present Queen Elizabeth.
The Queen at the moment.